You are listening to engaging and exciting conversation on the Radiant Culture Podcast.
Get ready.
Now. Welcome, everybody. You are listening to the Radiant Culture Podcast. My name is T-Mac.
And I'm Cookie Monster.
And it is cold. Well, actually, we should be saying the opposite. It's actually not that cold for us
people. It's cold. It's winter.
For us, it's cold. But like, if you tell someone else it's like 28 degrees and you're saying it's cold, then what are you talking about?
Only 24?
I don't know.
No, it's not 28. It's not 28.
For some people, this is winter. I mean, summer. Sorry. For some people, this is summer.
For us, this is winter. Anything below 25 is cold.
I agree with you. We are joined by Hannah Marks in the studio today.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Is it cold?
Definitely not. This is not cold. But if you speak to anybody from the Lowveld, they will say that this is not warm. So by logic, therefore it's cold. But I don't know. There's something about some winters that it feels warmer when you're actually in the sun. But the moment you hit shade or Zim House, it's ice blocks.
I think it's also because you don't have a lot of heating indoors.
Yeah.
Like you're on your own once you're inside.
Yeah, we don't need none of that. Heating for what?
And insulation. We have literally, our houses are built to let heat out.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
But the studio is warm, so that's a plus.
So, Hannah, tell us a little bit about you, just to give our listeners some context.
So, I am 29 and a half. I guess. No, I'm a bit older than that. I was trying to figure out. I'm 29 and like three quarters now. Anyway, that's besides.
But like, who says the age like that?
I don't know.
Someone who wants to know her birthday is coming soon.
No, I'm not one of those people who's like, here's my birthday and sends out a list of people. To me, that's a little bit presumptuous. Anyway.
29 and a half and three quarters?
Yep, okay. Whatever. I'm a lecturer. I lecture in theology, and for those who don't know, theology is the study of God, the study of His Word. It's basically what these podcasts are about, is figuring out God and how He relates to all of life. So that's what I do. I'm also studying for a master's online.
Nice.
And also at the moment teaching online, which is fun and games.
Awesome. So you're teaching theology as well.
I am teaching theology, and I also teach Christian teachers, so giving Christian educators the undergirdings of their faith and from a biblical worldview. So that's a phrase you guys are all familiar with.
Yeah.
Biblical worldview.
Yes.
Anyway. Awesome. This is pretty cool. Okay, so just to give everybody some background, today's topic is, I suppose, a very hot topic, because it's probably the most topical issue right now. We're going to be talking about Christianity and race. And of course, the whole race issue is kind of hot at the moment following the death of George Floyd in the US. And then that sparked a whole lot of protests, and Black Lives Matter has become the hashtag right now. But you know, the race issues have been, it's been a big issue for many, many, many years, especially in the US and I guess across the world. You know, race is a very sensitive topic. It's a very emotional topic, controversial topic in many ways. Mm. So, but we want to talk about that today. And of course, we're going to be talking about that mainly from a biblical viewpoint. And so we have Hannah as our guest today, as somebody who has a theological background, and she's a good friend of ours as well. But of course, Hannah is white, so that's going to add some spice.
Can I just throw in something?
Yeah.
Dichiri kudzidza chishona.
There you
but,
go.
Like only shishoma. Like the smallest amount.
Are you still taking classes though? Like
no. I mean, I have. I did do classes. My brother and I both did classes.
That is
which,
so cool.
I highly recommend that white people, especially if you live in Zimbabwe, it is no excuse for white people's shona to be limited to Tatenda and Shamwari.
Preach!
It's that. I mean, when I throw in that I'm still learning, people then just bombard me. And I was like, did you not hear what I said? But like, so Tim and I did some classes. That's my brother. We did some classes learning about Shana, which I think is really important, because if English is the language of the majority of the world, and certainly like the business world, the professional world, great, we must learn it. But as Christians in Zimbabwe, I think that white people need to learn Shana. There's so much. A language is not just a language. Yeah. It's a culture. It's a way of life that you're learning about. That said, I don't think it's taught massively well in schools. And so, you know, but that isn't to blame for.
Did you have to take it in school, or you were allowed to?
So we had to take it. Ours was the year group that had to take it up to, we had to have classes to O-level.
Yeah.
It was phased out at the end of Form 2, then the government made the decision.
Yes, actually, I remember.
And then, so we had to have, continue having L2 classes, but it wasn't taught in such a way that it helps you want to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
And actually what white people need to learn is conversational Shana. You need to, you know, understand the nouns and tenses, but then, picking up lingo so that you can throw it in, because what I've found, and I suppose this leads into the race, the issue of race, is that when you're so willing to learn someone's language, you're showing that you're not expecting everybody to come and approach you how you see things, how life is for you. So I think white people could be doing a lot better when it comes to learning other languages.
Well, that's actually very important and very interesting what you're saying, because one of the issues that's always kind of bothered me, I'll be honest, is that, you know, it's the whole thing that it almost feels as if, like, we had to learn English, right?
Yeah.
Like when we're speaking in English right now, we've all kind of had to master English. Some of us are still trying to master it, like myself. But we generally converse in English, right? It's the language of business. In church, we have our sermons in English. But when you then look at the flip side, sometimes it's like white people in particular, and I'm gonna be using this term a lot during our conversation. White people, it just feels like they haven't made the effort to learn. And I know there are many reasons why maybe they never really have to use it or whatever the case is. But the bottom line is it almost betrays as a lack of interest in learning. Then you kind of think, okay, do you even care about the environment that you're staying in? Does it matter to you?
Yeah.
Or do you feel like, whatever, you know, everyone has to come
up
to my level
anyway?
So, yeah. So, but then, of course, this is where this conversation is going. So let's go there. As a Christian, with everything that's going on right now, right, there's the whole Black Lives Matter hashtag trending everywhere, and the protests, like I said earlier. Is this something that Christians should be a part of, in your view?
In my view, absolutely.
Right.
Obviously, I appreciate the fact that in Zim, by the way, that we can just say white, black. I know that for some people those terms are very loaded and they don't want to say white, they want to say European or African American or whatever. But we're in Zimbabwe, so, you know, for us it's always be like white and black. And I think that in general, white people, and this is what I've seen a lot in this, it's particularly in social media, that white people need to learn a lot about things that are not a part of their story.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I look at America, and especially because Black Lives Matter is primarily happening in that context,
right.
I think that as Christians, we need to stand back and say, what is the movement talk about? What is it championing?
Mm-hmm.
Because it hasn't just cropped up now. It has been around, I don't know, mid-2010s onwards, maybe even before that.
Yeah.
But Black Lives Matter is standing up for the value of life in the context where, and I realize this is controversial, and I've tried to listen to as many sides of the story without totally confusing myself.
Yeah.
And let's just put a disclaimer on that, and I said this to Cookie Monster before we began, I was like, I'm not a professional. And I feel like there's so much more that I have to learn. But I think the importance is starting a discussion.
Yeah. Right.
But I do think white people, and I think in general as Christians, we need to be a part of the Black Lives Matter movement, not in terms of an ideology or but in what it's standing for is standing up for justice and
right.
recognizing that in America black lives have been cheap for a long time. If you don't believe in systematic racism, you need to do your own research because it is something that exists. And so personally, if I were in the States, I'd definitely be marching with everyone else, and I would encourage other Christians to do the same thing.
Okay, so basically, you're saying that this has nothing to do with whether someone is white or black. It's an issue of the value of life.
Absolutely.
Right. the subject of racism, if you look across, if you look at African history, for example, there's just been so much that's happened. I mean, I go to South Africa quite a lot, and I've got friends over there, and we constantly have these conversations, mm-hmm. right? I've got friends who are working in corporate in South Africa who face all kinds of, racism. And these are guys that are professionals, right? But there's this racial profiling that happens, and it's almost like an ingrained thing that's been mm-hmm. there, and it's just there. When I was in the, I've been to the States a couple of times as well, and the last time I was there for a few months, and I remember I actually spent, I intentionally went to an African-American church,
mm-hmm.
it's just because I love the music, I love the whole vibe there.
Me too.
But I also got to interact with people in the community,
mm-hmm.
Just because I make friends everywhere I go. And so, just getting to talk to guys, finding out where they're at, and you just sense the deep hurt that's there, just because they're growing up in this system that it just makes you feel like you're not welcome,
mm-hmm.
For so many reasons, right? And so this has happened across the board. This happened in Africa. Our own nation has gone through this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what I want to understand, and I know this may sound like a bit of a funny question, but it's actually a genuine question. Is there something wrong with black people? Is this, and I'm asking this as a black person, but I'm also asking it as a human being. Is there something fundamentally wrong with with black people? Because when you look at all the things that have happened, when you're looking at all the issues that are there right now, so I'm just posing that question, and maybe that's something we can discuss here. I know you guys are gonna say no, but I really want to know because. I don't know.
Do you mind?
I don't want to be stoned. I don't think there's anything fundamentally wrong with black people.
Yeah.
I think we, in a lot of instances, are born into situations that are already disadvantaged.
Mm.
But that being said, when you look at the state of Africa as a whole, and you see that a lot of the problems that are faced by the different nations, it's like copy-paste from one nation to the other. Okay, mm-hmm. there's corruption and greed there. Mm. Oh, yeah, corruption and greed there too. Whoa, there's also... are you guys all reading from the same playbook or what?
Like old presidents.
And it's just like, yeah, like... that part, I'm just like, we need to fix that. I don't know why we choose to hate democracy, but yeah. That part, I often wonder about my people. Why can we not get this whole thing right? But apart from that, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with us. I mean, if it wasn't for us, the Olympics would be so boring.
Yeah.
100%. I think in general, sports
and music.
Africans have led the way and continue to teach white people many lessons about their own rhythm disorders in, when it comes to that. But I can't say that. I think the question is flawed. There's not something wrong with black people.
Right.
I think there's something wrong with people that we treat each other in these ways. And it's become part of history. And, when you look at history at the moment, I think it's interesting seeing how both the original colonizing nations and then the colonized nations are trying to wrestle with these really uncomfortable, ugly parts of history. Mm-hmm. Some people may have seen that in the news that the statue of Cecil John Rhodes in Oxford outside Oriel College, it's a huge statue. It's 10 foot.
Wow.
People are lobbying and petitioning to have that taken down because of who Cecil John Rhodes was, what he stood for.
Yeah.
So there are ugly parts of history, and let's acknowledge that. And I've heard both sides. I've heard Black people saying, you know what, if you're white, you don't get to talk about racism. It's not a thing for you guys.
Yeah.
But if we're really honest, any treatment of someone based on race counts as racism. And there was racism before white people got here.
Yeah.
There was racism that came through the Arabic
traders
as they came around the horn down. South Africa.
Yeah.
And basically, the racism has been around from as early as, I guess, the Bible. And I think that's important to say is that this is not just a continental problem for us as Africans, Zimbabweans. It's a problem for us as human beings. It has a cultural root, but it also has a spiritual root.
Right.
And I'm not just saying that because I lecture in theology. I genuinely, there is something spiritual about it. Why would anyone try and put themselves up above, treat people beneath them because of something they had no control over?
Yeah.
Could it be a case of how people are socialized and how people are raised? One of the constant sort of things that I've heard over the last couple of days with this whole George Floyd case is the issue of white privilege,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's been on the table quite a bit. And I've heard conversations, debates about how white people are raised,
mm-hmm.
Predominantly in the States, because, you know, most of that's the stuff I've been watching is from the States, but that the system is sort of
rigged.
Yeah, it's already rigged, right? And there's white people are raised in a certain way, raised to believe that they're superior. And here I'm talking about the average white person. Of course, there's always going to be exceptions.
Yeah.
So, and I also want to get this understanding from you as someone who is white and probably has white friends and family and stuff, right? Of course, you have white family. So the whole issue of white privilege, is it an issue of how people actually socialized and raised? Are people raised to believe that they are better in some sense? Or is it an issue of that's already how the world is? People are already predisposed in a certain way towards Black people and towards white people. And then so it just kind of naturally plays out like that.
So what you're essentially talking about is race and racism an issue of nature?
Or nurture.
Yeah. And the answer is yes. There you go.
Thank you.
Yes. No, well okay. Done. It's both. We've been having this discussion a lot at home. You and I have been having these discussions, mm-hmm. Cookie Monster, about race, and I've tried to intentionally engage my Black friends about what's going on in the States.
Yeah. And I want to say I respect that about you, Hannah. The fact that you're so proactive, and you know Hannah will just shoot me a voice note because she wants to know something about this whole thing. She wants my perspective as a Black person. Just kudos to you for that. I respect that. Anyway,
thank
sorry,
you.
Carry on.
But honestly, I think because the race discussion doesn't happen frequently enough, in my opinion, amongst mixed groups, so Black, white, colored, I don't think it happens enough, and so that's partly why we're like, how do we talk about them?
Yeah.
Which is, I'm glad that you said right at the beginning, these are emotionally loaded issues, because for some people, racism has not ever been something they were aware of until they encountered it, maybe at school or a teacher or whatever it is, you know, going out into the big, bad, wide world. And I think it's important that as Zimbabweans, we're watching America going, yo, okay.
Yeah.
We've got issues. so have they.
Mm-hmm.
And so nobody's perspective on racism is going to be absolutely the same because it is determined by experience. What I will say is that I'll speak for myself. I think upbringing plays a huge part in it, mm-hmm. and how parents engage other, engage their children about issues of race. And I think generally, if people are brought up having mainly white friends, the culture is the same. But let me just say this, because just in the same way that I wouldn't look at like the Shona or the Ndebele communities in Zimbabwe and say, well, they're all the same. There are like subcultures and groupings. And so when I have been overseas and I've had somebody say to me, oh, yeah, I met another white Zimbabwean, and I was like, oh, gee, I'm sorry. I mean, like, because there is there are strong elements of certain groups within white culture in Zimbabwe that I find really difficult, where racism is still very much, we would call it, I call it, our family calls it like the Rhodie mentality, the right. Rhodesian, like Rhodesians never die type thing.
And so if I can just interrupt you there, it's funny that you say that, because sometimes the general belief, right, especially among black people, is that white people are white people, right? So white people are just put, they're just placed in this one grouping or this one class,
yeah.
right? You're all white people. So now that you mentioned that there's actually subcultures within your culture as well, that's an interesting perspective there.
And I think it's important as well that even within white Christian culture in Zimbabwe, there are different groups. You know, if any of the listeners have had farming friends, white farming friends, often like white kids who have grown up on the farms, white kids who've grown up on farms, they are incredibly, I mean, like, I'm not going to lie, they speak better Shona than you.
I know.
But I mean, I didn't even know there was such a thing as town Shona and rural Shona until we had that conversation one day.
Yeah.
But I think upbringing has a lot to do with it, because how parents see something, a child will automatically take on their parents' mindsets. Children are really good observers, poor interpreters. Mm-hmm. So they may not stop to ask, why is daddy treating someone this way? They just see it happen. But the systems and the structures that exist also play a huge role. So in our household, I don't know that race was ever something that I saw per se, and I'm saying saw in a kind of like, I saw it, but I'm not going to say colorblind, because I think that has some negative connotations to it.
I don't think anyone is colorblind.
I think you'd have to be, I was going to say blind to be colorblind, but I mean like dumb to be.
I hear you.
Because actually the reality is that God made more than one race.
Yeah.
Something, and let me just throw this out there at this point. When I teach theology, I want to point out that the stereotypical art of Jesus was firstly, it's a product of its time. It was created in Renaissance Europe.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesus was not white. He did not have blonde hair or blue eyes.
Yeah.
He was brown. You know, he may not have been as dark as an African, but he was Middle East and he was a Jew. He had brown hair, probably. I'm not making any definitive statements. But even with, I've heard some scholars say that Adam and Eve were probably black people.
Yeah.
Because there's no way that you have constant breeding of white people and you get black people somehow. The distribution of color doesn't work like that. But yeah. I think it's important that we understand that race, yes, is a part of us, but it's not a part that we can choose.
Yeah.
But that said, we can choose how we see it.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Makes a lot of sense.
Can I ask you, Hannah, in terms of having grown up in Zim, when did you realize you were white? And okay, let me put the question in context. I only realized that I was different from my white peers when I got to high school. All through primary and all of that, it didn't matter. Like, honestly, I had a moment when I wanted to be white, but that was simply because I wanted the hair. Apart from that, like, it didn't matter. Like, my friends are black. Like, your color wasn't the first thing I used to say whether you're going to be my friend or not. Only when I got to high school, it's like there was this huge divide, and it's like, oh, no, the white people play together, the black people play together. And I was like, oh, okay, oh, that's what we're doing, cool.
Yeah.
So that's when it really hit me, like, oh, okay, no, I'm a black girl, so can't have these white friends. Not can't have, but like you had fewer close relationships.
Yeah.
So
It's probably, I went to not an all white school.
Right.
Disclaimer. I was at Twin Rivers in the early years. Like Twin Rivers now is this beautiful school on the Avondale Flay. And when we were there, it was just a lot of flay mud, which everybody knows stinks. Anyway. so we had very, quite ethnically diverse classes, but I don't know that I saw race. I don't think I saw it at junior school, but I felt like I fitted in, and my friends were definitely more within black circles. I thought that the idea of having poloni toasted sandwiches was much more appealing than a peanut butter sandwich.
You guys didn't do poloni toasted?
No.
Oh, man.
I know. Wow. Well, actually, we did trade. So, you know, I often came away with the poloni sandwich. But, you know.
And what's with the whole Bovril? Like, guys, can we just address this right now?
Koda, are you putting Bovril and Marmite together? Like, together?
Are they different?
Yes.
They taste the same to me.
They don't. Anyway, we're not going down there. That's
Marmite lovers. Sorry, Marmite lovers. I'm black.
So I always found that I fitted more. I gravitated more. I love spending time with my black friends. And so...
My besties were white until I got to high school.
So you're like a coconut.
Yeah, but you see, this is where these things, I don't know, I'm like, are they helpful? Are they not helpful? Because sometimes people throw them at each other like a, you're a sellout, you know, because you're a coconut or something. I don't know.
Or you're salad. Tantan is a salad.
Okay. But.
That's my conclusion.
Anyway, sorry, I mean, carry on, Hara.
Can I just say that this is where I think we as Zimbabweans can have these discussions with humor that I cannot see us having this discussion if we had all been raised somewhere in the States in the same city.
Right.
And I think this is where that race in Zim is slightly different. Anyway, so junior school, mainly black friends, very happy with that. And I just felt like I connected more with black girls. It wasn't even a thing that I
actively
sought out. I'm not sure that kids, I certainly wasn't thinking along those lines.
Yeah,
no. Went to high school, had lots of, was in a very, like the streams. I was in a quite a heavily white stream. Mm-hmm. But again, I tried to fit in, but I didn't feel like I fitted. And at some point in my high school, I earned the nickname Muboy.
From the white girls.
No. Okay. Do you think they knew that?
Like, why?
But it was probably along one of these discussions one day about Maputi and how Maputi had we got in trouble for eating in the classroom. Mm-hmm. Maputi had a certain smell, and you can tell if you walk into a place that has window closed. We always used to get in trouble. Anyway, I always asked for Maputi. And, like, the girls would be like, Hannah, come on now. You know, and so we went down the coconut lychee root analogy. And then they were like, no, you are a Muboy. And at the time, I had a quarter of an orange stuffed in my mouth because we were having this discussion. Then I got caught by one of the nuns. But I've always found that I love the Shona culture. And I think it's, I don't know, I don't know that I noticed race until I actually went to England, and I felt so alien from other white people and from their culture. And I saw white yobs.
What's a yob?
Drunk, just like white guys, probably my age, a little bit older, just loud, disorderly behavior, drunk on, and
right.
Not on the streets as like living off the streets, but just party goers, clubbers. And I was just like, it freaked me out. Which sounds odd to say, but yeah.
Did people approach you differently once they realized you're not from there, that you're an African white person?
You know what the problem was? The problem was the skin color, because everything about skin color said that I fitted with them. And then I don't perceive that I have an accent, but I suppose that's the whole thing about accents. None of us thinks we have an accent.
Mm-hmm. I don't.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
But you don't because you, this is what we're used to. Anyway, and they would hear me talk and they would go, where are you from?
Yeah.
And it was one of those discussions, yeah. But it was probably more confusing.
It's not that different. Come on.
Well, yeah. Okay, do you know what the...
There's the levels to the British accent, though.
Yeah, true. I mean, like...
But Black Lives Matter.
Anyway, idiot, bruv. Anyway.
Sorry.
You just had to do that. Governor?
Sorry, Anna, carry on.
Anyway. And the telltale was certain words like turn off the light. We say off.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They say turn off the light.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, accent was a giveaway, but I just felt like, quite apart from the fact that you didn't watch the same cartoons growing up. I didn't know what any of like the chocolates or the sweets that they were talking about, and there was it's part of a culture that you grow up in.
Yeah.
But we had all sorts of, just so that people know that white people ask other white people these questions. Mm. I mean, we had questions like, people said to me, like, how come you're here? I was like,
okay.
Because I'm at school here. You know, my dad is working. We were in the UK. I did my A-levels. So I did up to O-level in Zim and then A-levels in the UK.
Yeah.
And they were like, but does your dad pay tax? So it was like the implication was, are you an illegal immigrant? Like how? And so, yeah, well, I don't know. We used to have this joke of like anytime a helicopter went over, they're like, Hannah, hide. But this is where I'm like, so anyway, yeah, white people are messed up.
Okay.
I've forgotten what we were talking about.
No, it's okay. I actually want us to
pivot.
To move away. Well, I guess to change gears a bit, just because of time.
Mm.
And I want us to bring this to the church now. One of the questions that I have is, you know, obviously the whole issue of race within the church. Now, granted, not every church is mixed racially, and but you know, we go to a church that is quite diverse in terms of race. But just the general, okay, diverse-ish.
No, if two drops make it diverse,
okay.
There's a couple of marshmallows.
Yeah, bro, the packet is pink marshmallows. Then there's like three white items.
That's diversity.
Come on. All right, fine.
Okay. Okay, now I've lost my train of thought. T-Mac, stop it. Anyway, okay, so the whole issue of race within the church, right? Yeah. If you look at, I was actually just listening to it was a conversation between T.D. Jakes and a bunch of other people. I think, what's the name? Christine Kane and...
Collins, Judith Smith.
Judith Smith, yeah, that one.
Yep.
Amazing conversation, right? But there's a lot that's unearthed in that conversation just about the whole issue of race within, I guess, mainly within the church in the U.S., right? That there's lots of issues there that remain unaddressed. But I actually want to bring it closer to home, right? What do you believe the church's role should be in this whole issue of race? Should the church play an active role in addressing it? As in actively actually addressing the issue to the congregants, where a pastor gets up and says, hey, listen, guys, we're running a series on racism. What is racism? What are the effects of racism? Are you racist? Maybe you're racist and you don't know. But I'm saying
everyone racist in the church put their hands up.
But I'm talking about course, more for like a proactive stance where the church actually addresses it, because I just feel like we eggshell around these issues, right? As Christians. So I guess that's the question that I have, and I want to hear what you think about that.
I think that Christians should always be more proactive. And I think too often we're reactive, which is why I've enjoyed listening to a lot of the discussions that have been through leading Christian ministers in other parts of the world. You alluded to T.D. Jakes, and he did a panel with, it was just him and a bunch of different white people, but different ministers from different parts of the globe.
Yeah.
And then there have been some really important discussions that I definitely would recommend people listen to. T.D. Jakes being interviewed by Carl Lentz, who is the Hillsong East Coast
That was really good.
Pastor. incredible. Dr. Really Anita great. Phillips had a conversation with Christine Kane, and then Carl Lentz did an interview with Dr. Anita Phillips as well. All on these subjects where, and this is where I think like we're kind of doing, this is our claim to fame. We're trying to do that as well here.
So I guess I'm TD Jakes in this case.
Yeah, your goatee and everything.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Please don't.
No, don't go there, Kura. Come back from that.
I'm quiet.
But I think that churches should be more active in leading the conversation, because if you don't lead the conversation leads you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Christians should be some of the biggest proponents speaking out for racial equality,
yeah.
Speaking out. And let me just say here, on behalf of some dumb white people, because dumb people exist regardless of your skin color, but to the people who have been hurt by white people posting "All Lives Matter" in response to the Black Lives Matter,
yeah.
I'm sorry. I will just say that, and that's not, I'm not saying this from a white guilt or I'm fully aware that we have gotten it wrong, you know, but we also know that we're not responsible for everything that was done by people of our skin color everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we'd have a hell of a time with that. But I do think we need to be having conversations, but then, and I'll say this as a white person, I think white people do need to just shut up for a minute. Because right. I've seen a hashtag, particularly a lot of white Christian ministers in the States, with the hashtag muted, but listening and learning. Because I think we need to learn. We need to understand. I've been having this conversation with my siblings, but when people respond like "All Lives Matter," I'm like, I want to hit my head or hit them, or you know, like I'm like, you, that's what, it, guys,
you have
not understood
point.
The
yeah.
point. And I think this is it. We haven't understood the point. We haven't understood. Stop long enough to say what is causing someone to say that. Statistics on one side. If your experience, you have personally experienced what so many black Americans describe of sitting in their car, having been pulled over by a white cop,
mm-hmm.
and shaking because they're like thinking, don't get killed, don't get killed, don't get killed. That experience alone is enough.
Yeah.
Regardless of statistics of how many crimes are committed by black people versus white people, proportions of populations, etc. And I think we need to stop, ask questions, say, can you just talk me through it? And I think there's so much value in that, because we don't realize what kind of baggage people are carrying around when it comes to race.
Yeah. And this is what I respect about you, Hannah, the fact that, you know, you've reached out to me multiple times, you know, just for us to have these conversations. Because, and I think the learning needs to happen from both.
Yeah.
From both sides of the fence, because there's many things that we as black people don't understand about your culture, and it's very easy for a black person to
like Greek yogurt.
Yeah, Greek yogurt. Like, what's up with that Greek yogurt stuff?
This is a prior conversation that we had.
Yeah, like I call it white yogurt, because like who has yogurt with no sugar, bro? Like, okay, listen, it's okay.
Okay, so you can have vanilla yogurt, but you won't have
vanilla yogurt.
But vanilla
peach,
yogurt has sugar,
mango
flavorings. And
yogurt
colors.
Should be yogurt, sweet yogurt. That's the yogurt we
anyway,
grew up eating.
Come back from
the
yogurt
moment
discussion.
It's not. That's like yeah. So she has white yogurt because she's white. Right. So. Okay. So no, it's okay. Listen, I'm learning these
you
things.
Lactose.
and we have lactose. You're terrible. So. the learning needs to happen from both ends, because one thing for certain is that not all white people are racist, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of pleasant white people out there who actually who want to interact with black people, who value black people. So we've got to be careful as black people that we don't assume that every white person that you meet is racist, and that they're demeaning you in some way, or that they view you as being less than them in any way.
Mm.
So that's something we need to work on as well.
May I just jump on that and
yes,
say,
ma'am.
One of the things I did a lot of Bible outreaches into the high schools in a couple of different girls' high schools across them. And in a lot of these places, I didn't often form strong friendships. It was literally coming in for an assembly. But there were a couple of friendships that got built from that. But one of the things I realized is that for many different Zimbabweans growing up, they may not have a lot of exposure to white people,
right,
and to white culture. And so some of the friendships that I've built, there's a lot of like, hey, oh, why, and like, why do you do that? And the tentative, can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Do white people eat sadza? I mean, like, you know, and we have to be willing to ask those questions and not laugh at them and yeah. not. And so for some of the girls that I have come into friendships with and stuff, they've come and said, like, you are the first white person I've actually met. And so poor show on the yeah. on the white people. But it's, I think some of it, and this is where, you know, we swing to the other extreme, is that the systems created by poverty exist the world over.
Right.
And I just want to say something on a theological level, is that sin is not, we have misunderstood sin as only being a personal thing. Sin is also systemic. It is within power structures and yeah. systems. And so you see Jesus coming, and Jesus is absolutely passionate about people. I think it's the Gospel of Mark, it's in the Gospels, it just talks about he was driven by compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the race issue, particularly when I am, one of the reasons I reach out is because I want to know the other side of the story, because yeah. I recognize it's there.
Yeah.
But compassion is distinctly lacking when people say, you know, the statistics are blah, 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 blah. And we've lost the human element. And I think that's what it's really important for us as Christians to acknowledge, is where is your pain in this?
Yeah.
Because there is so much pain
yeah.
in this area. So I think as Christians, we need to, and that's part of the power in shutting up, is that you can hear someone else's pain.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to fix it. But by stopping to listen, you've vindicated
I like that.
Them almost. You've not just legitimized it, but you've become part of the cure, because yeah. part of the problem is that we don't hear each other.
Yeah. And then another question that I have, the whole issue of the whitewashing of the Bible, if I can call it that,
mm-hmm.
or basically Jesus has kind of, I almost feel like Jesus was hijacked in a sense, right? The Jesus that we were introduced to when we were growing up was that image that you mentioned earlier, blonde hair, blue eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And so naturally we grow up thinking that that's Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess maybe subconsciously we then naturally sort of start associating Jesus with whiteness,
mm-hmm.
right? I feel like that's a problem that actually needs to be. And this is where the activist in me kind of wants to stand up, where I'm like, but why has that been allowed to happen? At my mom's house, she's got this portrait. My mom is Anglican, of Jesus. And it's like this, the dude looks white, right? You know, like,
but he also looks creepy. Can I just say that, like, okay, those portraits of Jesus,
I'm gonna say this, okay, I don't mean to offend anyone as I say, but the dude actually like looks gay. Like he's got that, he's got this, hey, she's just got this look, right?
Well manicured is the word you're looking for.
Okay, so yeah, well, there we go. Well manicured. Listen, some of these terms I'm still learning, right? So I'm just like, no, but seriously, there's something wrong with this, right?
Yeah.
But I'm trying to link this to the bigger question, which is that, to what extent has that affected Christianity, right? And the whole issue of race within Christianity? Because I feel like we just take it for granted, right? That we've got this God. God is like, if you ever depict Jesus as a black guy, it's just like,
it's like making Father Christmas black.
You see, it just looks weird. But why does it look weird? And how has that then played into our into our whole perception of race and how we process everything and how we view Jesus, then how we view white people, and then how white people view black people?
So there's a lot of history in what you're talking about, and a lot of it has to do with where the center of history was during the time when art, I guess, came into its own. And the reality is that majority of what we have is the traditional picture of Jesus, which anybody who went to a Catholic school or an Anglican school, I went to a Catholic high school, and there were some impressive, creepy pictures of Jesus, as well as the crucifix up on the walls. But the art in question that you're talking about could have came through the Renaissance period, and it was developed in mainly white countries, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And as this is the thing where I think we need to learn history as well when it comes to race. And
agreed.
I think in addition to learning these different, you know, going and looking up the T.D. Jakes discussions and the all of these different perspectives, is we also need to do some history digging as well, because you know, no Zimbabwean is going to be an absolute expert on Black African American experience,
yeah.
The civil rights era. So we need to learn about that. But Christianity, because it was up until 1517, there was only one church. 1517 is when the Protestant church starts,
mm-hmm.
and basically there become a multiplicity of movements. But as Christianity was taken, it was taken mostly at that point by Europeans, but let's also say Mediterraneans. Mm-hmm. I want to say Mediterraneans more than Europeans, because European has too many connotations. And by the way, Mediterraneans covers a very broad range of way more tanned, if I can put it like that.
Okay.
So as Christianity was spread, so the pictures went with it, and came with it. And I think there has been a history of Christianity. And if you look at the globe, Christianity enjoys highs and lows in different parts of the world at different times.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it has to do with how Christianity spread, what was taken with. And so as the colonization, the scramble for Africa happens, there were the three C's. It was civilization, Christianity, and commerce,
mm-hmm.
were seen to be the need to take, to be taken to the savage. Disclaimer, I am not saying I believe that. That is what the people of the day believed, as the things that would be greatly civilizing. So I think it does do a lot of damage to Christianity, because Christianity in a lot of parts of the world has been seen as the white man's religion.
Yeah.
And I think that's fundamentally, absolutely, go to the beginning of the roots of the Christian,
mm-hmm.
the Christian movement. It would not have been white. It almost certainly would have been towards the darker shades of brown and black.
Yeah.
Just a shout out, there is an app that is The Chosen, which I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's basically a multi-series about the life of Christ. And it really digs a lot deeper than just like The Passion of the Christ or Son of God. The movies do. But one of the things that really shows is that the Middle East at that time was very, very diverse skin colors. And mm-hmm. For those who've traveled to the Middle East, you know there is not one skin color. It's darker shades of brown, basically. So. Yeah. You know, the roots of Christianity. And by the way, just as a sub thing, Christianity in the first century, first and second century, had strong roots within North Africa.
Yeah.
Saint Augustine, for those who may have heard about him, he was a Libyan. He was Augustine of Hippo. Hippo was in Libya. And so when I've talked classes through church history, it's been really interesting for me as a white Zimbabwean seeing my students who are mainly black, but coming to these realizations that Christianity hasn't always been a white man's religion.
Yeah.
That black theologians existed before, like, I don't know, 1960s. But
yeah.
The gospel should be the great equalizer. And I think that's where scriptures really come into it. And the incredible thing about the gospel and Galatians 3:28, the statement, there is neither Jew nor Gentile.
Right.
And to borrow Martin Luther King Jr., there is neither Protestant nor Catholic. That is just, do we realize what we're saying? Do you realize how deep racism was a part of the culture, first century culture?
Yeah.
Racism was a thing because primarily Jews had understood themselves to be superior. Mm-hmm. And you really see this in John 4 when Jesus meets the woman at the well. Yes. She's the Samaritan woman. And she says to him, don't you know that Jews and Samaritans don't have anything? Yeah. And it was an issue of race. And he treated this woman who was not his race. And by the way, then that also connects with the Good Samaritan. Mm-hmm. The story of the Good Samaritan. Essentially, the modern day equivalent, particularly in America, would be the Good Samaritan was a black man who came to help you when all the white people looked away at your pain.
Yeah.
So, you know, the issues of race are within the gospel, but they generally don't come in. You know, there's not a, like, enter Simon of Cyrene. He was black. You know, that doesn't come in. Yeah. But race was there at the time of the gospels.
Even the whole story of the Ethiopian eunuch when he gets baptized by Philip. Like, when
you say Simon of Cyrene was chosen because he was the one that looked the most like Jesus, like in terms of
if you saw him walking by,
you'd do a double take, but it'd be like less of a double take than if they'd chosen a lighter skinned person to carry the cross for him.
So I guess the challenge is that sometimes we get too caught up in this whole thing about Jesus was black and, you know, would you follow a black Jesus? And I'm like, you know, I think we're missing the point when we do that.
Mm.
Because ultimately, Jesus is God and he made all races.
Mm.
And Jesus could have chosen to come as a Chinese own, right?
Mm.
Saying, you want to be a Hon Akan.
Oh my goodness.
Right? But Jesus came.
Oh my gosh.
Just
went there.
Jesus. You know, Jesus could have chosen to come as anyone, but that's how God chose to reveal himself. So sometimes we can get caught up in the whole race thing and forget the fundamental issue, right, which is that God has, our value is given to us by God, that we're made in God's image.
Mm.
Our time is like running like crazy here. But I guess the other thing that I'd like you to do for us, Hannah, is just the whole issue of God's image, because I think it's such an important part of this whole race discussion.
Absolutely.
Right? That we're all made in God's image and that we all reflect God's image.
Mm.
Yeah, I may have put you on the spot there a bit.
No,
but,
you didn't. Yeah. Genesis 1:26-27 says, let us make man. And there's God saying in the beginning at creation, let us make man in our image. And there's a lot of discussions. There's a lot of theology as to what the image of God is. But regardless of what it is, we were made to be like him. And I like to say that the chief way we were made to be like him, if we wanted to say what does it mean to bear his image, it's relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because do you know what I love is that the Trinity itself speaks about unity and diversity without division. Because Father, Son, and Holy Spirit are not the same. They're different people, but they are God. They share the same essence.
Yeah.
I had a lecturer who explained it as the who-ness and the what-ness.
Mm-hmm.
The what-ness is God. They shared the same essence of God, but they were three persons. And yet they are perfectly unified, but diverse. They don't have to be the same. So the image-bearing thing is one of the strongest arguments. And when white people have said, you know, all lives matter, or like this isn't as big an issue as people make it out to be, no, you've missed the point. It is an issue.
Yeah.
If one person said it, it would be an issue. But this isn't just one person. And we were all made in the image of God,
right,
all of us. And do you know what the incredible thing is? When the fall happens, when sin comes in, sin mars the image. It messes it up, but it doesn't destroy it. So all human beings have value. Their life has value from conception,
mm-hmm,
regardless of whether they're Christians or not. And Christians should be proponents of the value of life being respected.
Yeah.
And wanting to show that, wanting to show that. And let me just also say that in 2 Corinthians 5, it talks about the ministry of reconciliation. Yeah. It's chiefly talking about us being reconciled with God. But reconciliation, if it's ever been needed on the earth, the Black Lives Matter movement shows how much we as the church have messed up, because we should be leading the conversation. And too often, the history of the church, Christianity has been complicit.
Yeah.
And I think nowadays, slavery doesn't exist in the sense that it did. The civil rights movement has brought some change, but not a lot. But now, the equivalent of us being complicit is us being silent. And so I think we need to say, what does it mean to be reconcilers amongst white and black people in Zimbabwe? And I want to say that as Zimbabweans, it's really easy for us to care a lot about what's going on in the States. And we should care,
yeah,
because injustice is injustice, and the people of God are supposed to be a people of justice.
Yeah.
But do we care about the value of life in Zim? Do we know about Levison Mube and the three MDC women? Let's put politics on one side for a moment. We have to stand up for life mattering here.
Yeah. Wow, that's really good. That's really good, Hannah. T-Mac, I don't know if you want to say anything.
That was really good, Hannah. And I think, like you said, the church has to lead the conversation, or else we'll be reacting to things. And I don't know. It's just, that's kind of the stance we've taken so far. And even here, I don't think churches are talking about it at all. Because, like you said, it's an issue that's not happening on our soil.
Mm.
But there are other issues that have happened here, and conversations that need to happen that haven't happened yet.
Yeah.
And like Cookie was saying, like, why can't we have a course that racially sensitizes people and answers those questions and gives someone the opportunity to speak to another white person and ask those questions that they've never asked before, even for the black person, for the white person to speak to a black person in that sort of context where there's no employer or employee relationship, or no teacher student, like you're all Christians, we're having a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So I really wish there was something like that.
Go.
So I threw this out at Kuda, is that something that I've heard of happening in different circles in Zim is a race group where people come together, and this was my sister was a part of one, but it was something that somebody who'd studied in the States had done in that context, and it was everybody got a turn to tell their story of how race had affected them, how racism had affected them.
Yeah.
And it was, and this was the thing, because the stats we can argue about, but the personal experience nobody can argue with, and it was incredibly. This is all kind of my sister's experience, but she came back and she was like, it is humbling, it is painful, it is such an eye-opener to see what have Zimbabweans experienced when it comes to race. And just from friends coming and saying, let's talk about race, what's your experience, what's my experience, what have been the worst parts of where you've seen racism, either at you or from, you know, how does this look from your lens? And so I think
fix it, like, for our nation.
That's really good. That's really good. Yeah.
And I think it, just let me say this, is that silence is not helpful. It has never been helpful. It never will be helpful.
Yeah.
And I think that it's so much easier to misunderstand when we don't have the conversations.
Yeah.
And to keep our prejudices of, like, yeah, white people, they just like the Greek yogurt, and, you know, that's a humorous example, but the point is that it's much easier to stay here, like, and to refuse to engage. But if you really want to learn, you have to be prepared to be challenged and put your own preconceptions on one side, your own opinions, and just accept that you don't know everything about everyone's experience.
Yeah. Wow, that's really good. And as Christians, especially, our starting point should always be the Word of God.
Mm-hmm.
And if we really believe what the Bible says, that God made all people in His image, then we may have differences in culture, we may have racial differences, you know, we may have have, we may have all kinds of differences, mm-hmm. but the one thing that, like you rightly said, that the gospel is the great unifier,
mm-hmm.
that should be the one thing that brings us together. And that gets us, and I guess allowing God to challenge us,
yeah,
is an important thing. You know, God is going to challenge all of us in different ways. As a black person, you may have ill feelings towards white people for whatever reason. Yeah. Sometimes you just need to check those to say, yeah. How does God view that?
Yeah.
Right. As a white person, similarly, maybe you've just stuck to your own cocoon and you want to stick with your people, or maybe you've had some bad experiences with black people and you just think, ah, these black people, whatever, right?
Mm.
Whatever the issue could be, the one place that we need to all come to is the cross,
yeah.
right? And realize that that's where our value is derived from,
mm.
and allow God to challenge us, allow God to deal with issues in our own hearts. And it's not going to be easy. You know, it's going to be a process, but I think that's an important starting point. And that's really what we're trying to do,
yeah.
with this podcast and with this conversation, you know, to get us to really start thinking about these things.
100%.
Unfortunately. Our time's up. Hannah, any parting shots from you?
I think at the end of the day, we cannot control anyone else. I don't like Facebook arguments. I don't know that they achieve anything. But it's very easy to share these things. It's much harder to do the work of examining our own hearts. And on Judgment Day, we're going to be asked about our hearts, about our attitudes, about our mindsets and our behaviors. So check your heart and let the Holy Spirit deal with you.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for that. T-Mac?
No, that's us.
That's us.
And
we are out.
Peace out.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Radiant Culture Podcast. If you want to make a contribution, make a suggestion, or have a request, you can get in touch with us via email on radiant@thehub.co.zw or inbox us on Facebook and Twitter. Look out for the next episode and remember to share this one with everybody you know. God bless.
It's hot. It's fresh. It's uncut. #RealTalk on the Radiant Culture Podcast.